Hi, I'm Jamie,
and I'm having breakfast at Uncle Mike's place in Westtown. You're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above-ground audio magazine.
Thank you, Jamie. Enjoy your lovely breakfast at Uncle Mike's in Westtown. This is Outside the Loop. Yes, we are Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine, broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue in the Tribune Tower in downtown Chicago. This is show number 602. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Be sure to check us out online at Outside the Loop on Twitter and on Facebook. The website, OutsideTheLoopRadio.com or WGNRadio.com. There are so many ways you can get the show. It's easy. It's a beautiful thing. We have a lot to do on the program today. Coming up, we will talk about the state of the rental market in Cook County, because that's an important statistic to look at. A lot of people rely on rental housing, and so we will check in and we will see how the rental market is doing. Also, we go down to Fort Wayne, Indiana for another segment that we like to call Low Power to the People, where we profile low power community radio stations. This morning, we're talking to the folks at WELT. And again, they're in Fort Wayne, a low power radio station, and they're broadcasting out of a public library. I've never heard of that before, but WELT out of the Allen County Public Library down in Fort Wayne. And of course, we'll check in with Steve Krakow for another Secret History of Chicago Music this morning, learning about a blues organist by the name of Deacon Jones, who, this guy's played with everybody, so we'll learn all about that. Usually, Colin Seaman is here producing the show. We don't even know where he is, so Jess Raines is here this morning filling in for Colin producing the show in the booth. Jess, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for being here. And of course, as always, in the WGN Radio newsroom, Domati Pongo is here. Hi, Domati.
Good morning to you.
Good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
So, all right, you know, tax time has come and gone. Did everybody pay their taxes?
Reluctantly, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Jess, did
yeah.
you pay your taxes?
I did, but I owed money this year.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Isn't that fun? We owed a lot of money because we bought a house this past year and with loans and all that stuff. Ouch. So the federal government, yeah, they got the paycheck from the Steven family. So you're welcome. All right. Here's the thing. Now is the time when the scammers are out. The people that pretend to be the IRS, and they will get in touch with you and say, hey, you owe money or you fail to pay your taxes. And so because of that, we're going to come pick you up. You're going to jail. And so here's the thing. This never happened to me, I don't think, before this year. I've been getting phone calls from, I don't know who, the scammers. And so I've got a clip. I've got a voicemail here. This is an actual call that I got. Now, the first time I got this, I was a little freaked out because, you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, did I pay the day? Yeah, well, no, we paid the taxes. What's going on here? This was from, I don't know, this week or last week, a voicemail that appeared on my phone. Sounds like this.
We are calling you from investigation team of IRS. We have just received a notification regarding your tax filings from the headquarters, which will get expired in next 24 working hours. And once it get expired after that, you will be taken under custody by the local police, as there are 4 serious allegations pressed on your name at this moment. We would request you to get back to us so that we can discuss about this case before taking any legal action against you. The number to reach us.
Yeah, you don't need the number. But isn't that freaky?
Very scary.
I mean, there are 4 counts against me. What? What did I do?
And, you know, we do stories a lot in the newsroom about how, you know, the IRS will never call you. They'll always send you a piece of mail about these types
right.
of things. But this is the first time I've ever heard the message. And it's very convincing. It's scary.
It is kind of scary. And I'll tell you this. Here's where they go off the rails, though, is when you get like 4 of these and it's the same person talking like this because it is a computer. Then you're sort of tipped off.
Because Siri works for law enforcement.
Because Siri's a narc.
Right,
that's why.
Exactly.
Right. So if you get a call like that, please do not call them back. It is a scam. It is a scam. The IRS will not call you like that. They will mail you. They will get in touch in different ways, but they will not call you and threaten law enforcement. Although we like think that might happen because who likes paying money to the IRS? That is not going to happen. So if you get the scam, if you get the phone scam, don't do it. And I, you know, here's the thing. I feel like you're going old school if you're going phone. I feel like now everybody's got an email, and I think it's a lot easier just to send some official looking email and have somebody click on it accidentally. I don't know, in my mind.
No, it's true. They're really going after seniors, too.
Yeah.
So they call a lot of landline phones as well and try to get you. And also, if you happen to answer, do not give your social security number over the phone.
Also, here's the thing. Don't even say yes. I think I talked about this on the show before, but this new thing is they'll call you and then you'll hear somebody fidgeting around with like a headset and you'll hear somebody say, oh, I'm just messing around with my headset or my phone. Can you hear me? And if you say yes, they record that and then they can use that to like, you know, authorize things in your name, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah. What a world we're living in right now, huh?
Wow.
This is the future, dude. This is the future. I'm scared, but I like it.
Just gave me the heebie-jeebies just thinking about it. So now just respond no. Can you hear me? No, I can't hear you.
I do not, nothing. Negative. No, get
Remove
out.
Remove me from your list. That's
right. Right, I'm out. No, negative. Eject. All right, well, it's going to be all right. We are here with you for the hour here on Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Stevens. Stay tuned. The gang is all here. Don't go anywhere. This is 720 WGN. Nice blues to wake you up on a Saturday morning. Good morning. This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven here along with you. Thanks for joining us today. We are Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine right now, listening to some local music from the band Curio. You can check them out at curio.bandcamp.com. They say they play some soul-shaking blues, and I would agree with that. And they're playing coming up on Friday and Saturday, May 4th and 5th at Reggie's as part of the Moonrunners Music Festival over at Reggie's Rock Club. Each week, I love to feature local music. This week, hearing some blues jams from Curio. Rental housing is really important for so many of us for a variety of reasons, but what is the state of rental housing today, especially locally in Cook County? Well, recently, the Institute for Housing Studies at DePaul University put out a report that examines this question, and Jeff Smith is the executive director at the Institute for Housing Studies at DePaul. Housingstudies.org is the website, and Jeff is with us this morning on the phone. Jeff, good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Good morning.
So, first of all, before we get into this, briefly, if you could, just tell us what the Institute for Housing Studies at DePaul does. What are you all about?
Yeah, we are an applied research center based in the real estate department at DePaul, and we collect a lot of data on the housing market and produce different types of applied research and data products that help housing practitioners understand what's happening in the housing market and be strategic when they're developing policies and strategies around affordable housing and neighborhood development issues.
And these really are important issues, affordable housing, how we are developing neighborhoods and going forward, what that's looking like, I think. And I want to ask you just from a, I don't know, a wide angle lens here, overall, when we're talking about the rental market in Cook County, how's it doing? I mean, can we generalize that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very interesting story. Since 2007, which is when there was this, you know, really big recession and housing market crash, what's been happening in Cook County and really what's been happening across the country is you've seen a really dramatic shift towards renting. You know, during the early parts of the 2000s, even throughout the 90s, there was a heavy emphasis on home ownership and housing policies, and that was manifesting itself in the availability of mortgage credit, low interest rates, et cetera. But when the market crashed, you saw a real shift back to renting. And what that means is that as demand for rental housing has increased since 2007, we've seen an increasing affordability crunch in Cook County, meaning that there are the supply of really affordable rental units has not kept pace with the demand. And in many ways, we've seen actually a loss of affordable units, which puts a lot of pressure on low or moderate income households and even middle income households in some cases who are looking for affordable rental housing.
You know, that's interesting when you talk about low-income renters. And you say in your report here that low-income renters, they represent the largest share of renters in Cook County, but higher-income renters continue to increase. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, after the housing market crash, for a number of reasons, households across the income spectrum started to choose to rent. Low-income households have always been more predominantly renters, because to buy a house, you need income, you need savings, and that's often less available for lower-income families. But higher-income households, particularly higher-income households in their late 20s and 30s, often would choose to own as opposed to rent because of a variety of reasons. But after 2007, we saw that those higher-income households were continuing to rent. And a lot of reasons why that might be, ranging from, much more restrictive mortgage lending policies, so it's much harder for folks who wanted to buy a house to get a mortgage, so they continue to rent. A lot of folks who did own a home maybe went through foreclosure or lost their home, and it was difficult for them to buy a new home, so they chose to rent just because that was out of necessity. A lot of folks, because of uncertainty in the housing market and not quite clear which direction the market was going, if the market had reached bottom or how the economy was going, chose to rent because it gave them a little more flexibility. If the economy didn't improve, if they needed to get a job in another city, it was much easier to move if you're a renter than if you're an owner. So for a range of reasons, people of higher incomes started to increasingly choose to rent. And that's been a really big, kind of factor when you look at new development in the city. If you pay attention to the skyline downtown, you'll see cranes all over the place, and a lot of those cranes are really associated with the development of high-cost, expensive rental housing downtown. If you ride the Blue Line, you'll see a lot of new construction along, Logan Square, near Logan Square, California, Western Avenue Blue Line stations. A lot of those are, again, geared towards higher income and younger renters who are choosing to rent, choosing to live in really dense neighborhoods. And that's been a really one of the more significant shifts in housing demand, and how that, and that's an example of how that demand is kind of manifesting itself in the built environment.
And one thing that we've talked about before in our local conversation is the rental rate, and that rental rate seems to be increasing in terms of how much you're paying for rent. Traditionally, over the past few years, that's been going upward and rental units have become more expensive. In your report, you're saying that it's starting to stabilize a bit, but it is still pretty high.
Yeah, as the number of high-income renters has increased, all of these new developments are typically very expensive. So it's really hard to build cheap new housing these days. So anything that's new construction is going to be expensive. So that's just one component of why rents are going up. And then in some neighborhoods that are really desirable or become desirable recently, the supply of rental housing in those neighborhoods hasn't quite caught up with that new demand. So you're talking about places in the city, at least, like Logan Square or in Pilsen, where people are starting to, think, hey, these are great places, cool places to live. Let's go find an apartment there. The developers haven't quite been able to build new rental units there for a number of reasons. So the demand for housing has grown in those places, but the supply hasn't. So that's causing rents to increase in some of these neighborhoods. So for a number of reasons, this increase in demand for rental housing from higher income households is causing rents to increase.
Why do you think we need to pay attention to the rental market locally? What is that saying about this area overall?
Well, I think, affordable housing is really important for a few different reasons. From an individual family perspective, housing is a big cost, right? It's probably the most significant cost that anyone has in their, annual income. And so if you're paying, 50% of your income towards housing for a family, that means that they've got a lot less money to put towards other essentials like savings or education or, other types of critical costs. And that adds to the potential economic vulnerability of those families. So affordable housing from a family perspective is really important. And then also from a city perspective, it's really important that cities have a range of housing options that are available, not just for higher income folks, but for low and moderate and middle income families as well. I think the goal of, you know, in cities in general is to create sort of diverse and inclusive places. And it's important to make sure that you've got a range of housing options across the affordability spectrum to make sure you have, you know, those diverse cities.
Yeah, it's really an important thing when we talk about housing, affordable housing. And like this report is discussing, the rental market in Cook County. Again, housingstudies.org is the website, so you can check out that report up on the Institute for Housing Studies website at DePaul University. Jeff Smith is the executive director of that organization. Jeff, thanks so much for talking to us this morning. It's I think it's really interesting. It says a lot about who we are as a city, and thanks for all your hard work.
Yes, thank you.
You bet. Again, check out housingstudies.org. We will link up to it on OutsideTheLoopRadio.com and WGNRadio.com. This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven. You are listening to 720 WGN. Got some blues music, some gritty blues this morning. Good morning. Mike Steven here along with you on Outside the Loop. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate that. And we are listening to some local music from the band called Curio, C-U-R-I-O. They are some pretty cool blues musicians. Curio.bandcamp.com is the website. They are playing a show at Reggie's coming up on May 4th and on May 5th, so Friday and Saturday, over at Reggie's in the South Loop. Each week, I love to feature local music. You can send us some of your tracks if you are a local musician or if you are in a Chicagoland band, and we'll get those songs on the radio for you and mention the gigs that you've got coming up. This week, hearing some jams from Curio. And, you know, I always like to say that radio can bring people together. And we all know that radio has a history of informing and entertaining neighborhoods and communities. And really, there are a lot of low-power radio stations around this region that serve neighborhoods and towns, and they're doing some great work. So we highlight that work in our occasional segment that we like to call Low Power to the People.
My name is Janine Watt, and I am the host of The Shake. Why is the Allen County Public Library's WELT 95.7 FM Community Radio wonderful?
WELT. You are listening to WELT 95.7 FM. WELT.
Welcome to a beautiful noise on here at WELTLP 95.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Spinner. This program does something a little
bit
different every week.
And this week, we travel to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and we connect with John O'Rourke, who is the station manager at WELTLP, that is 95.7 FM in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He is on the line with us this morning from the studios of WELT. John, good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much.
You bet. And so talking about your station, WELT, you just celebrated 2 years, as I understand it?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're really excited.
That's great. So 2 years on the air, and acpl.info/WELT is the website. And let's talk about that. So ACPL, that stands for Allen County Public Library. You are located, if I'm not mistaken, you are located in the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne.
Absolutely. We're in the main library branch right in the heart of downtown Fort Wayne. And as far as we know, we are the only library that has a radio station. So it's a very cool thing. It's part of our whole media center we have here at the library. We have the access cable channels for the area. Cable systems are housed here also, and we became an outshoot or an offshoot of those.
I think that's really cool. I've never heard of a radio station in a public library, but I guess when you think about it, you know, low power FM station, the mission that you have is you are serving the community, and what better place than to be located in the center of the community, which is a public library?
Absolutely. And it fits so well with what we do at the library, too. You know, our whole concept here at the library is enriching the community through lifelong learning and discovery. So a lot of people can come in and fulfill that dream of being on the radio or learn how to do the production, whether it's on the TV side or the radio side. They can get job skills out of it. And they can obviously tell stories that they want to tell, stories you can't tell on a commercial radio station.
Why did you create the station? Why did the station come together? Because I think anytime that a community radio station comes together, it is really an outgrowth of the neighborhood, of the people, and it takes a lot of work to do that.
It really does. The when Eric Mulberg, who kind of founded the station, who was here at the, with all the access channels for 30 plus years here at the library, he had always wanted to have this radio side of things, and he was able to get it done. But the reason behind it was that we wanted an opportunity for underserved populations to get programming that they couldn't get from commercial radio or even like an NPR or something like that. Because what we've got, by the way, Fort Wayne has, I believe, the second largest population of Burmese refugees in the country. So there's people who don't have, and they're not English speaking. So we can put programming on that reaches them or reaches the Latino community. So we can do these kinds of programs and reach communities who pretty much are isolated or underserved by regular media.
And that was really the purpose, I know, at the outset of why you put WELT together. And that story of how it came together, so tell us about that, because, I mean, there's a little bit of sadness, a little bit of tragedy involved in that story.
Well, Eric had been working so hard for many years trying to get a low power license, tried, you know, over a decade ago when they first put him out. And then that one didn't go through. And then just, you know, 3-4 years ago, got the construction permit that allowed us to build this radio station. He did all the hard work and along with a lot of volunteers and community leaders to raise the money to put this together, and a lot of donated equipment from other radio stations here in town helped it all come together. And he got it rolling. And last July, he was on his way into work here at the radio station and was tragically killed in a motorcycle accident. And so that's why the studio we're broadcasting from today is the Eric Mulberg Studio in his honor, because it's actually kind of cool. We've got our, you know, the light up on air light. When it lights up, it's got his name on it. We figured that is a very apropos thing, because every time we turn it on, it's because of his original leadership that makes it possible. So that's a cool thing. And, you know, even though we're here in the library, the radio station itself isn't funded by the library. The library gives us the space. I'm actually on staff for the library, so my time is part of that. But all the cost, all the expenses, whether it's covering the music licensing fees or equipment and things of that nature, we have to raise our own funds for that. And that's the way it was presented when Eric first said it. You know, we wanted to be as independent as we could be, although the library never has come down and said, you can't broadcast this and please play this and please play that. I mean, they understand what community radio is and they embrace that concept. So it's been really, really a neat thing.
I think that's really interesting that, you know, you are part of this public library. And hey, if you look at your tax bill, yeah, I mean, the public library, it's one of those things that gets a lot of your tax money, but it's important to note that the radio station of WELT does not get that. So you are self-funding, you are relying on donations, you are relying on the community to really come on out and help you. And so I want to ask you about the community of Fort Wayne, how it's responded in the last 2 years to what you are doing at WELTLP.
Well, as you know, a low-power radio station is low power, so it's got a relatively small footprint for the market, and so the people that hear it love it. We get a lot of exposure online through our web streams and Radio Free America rebroadcast everything we do, and so the people that there's this core group, and a lot of these are the volunteers that are on the air who just love what we do. They love the eclectic variety of programming that's on every day. We don't have a set format. We're not just playing classical or, I mean, it's almost anything goes. So there's people who really like that. And, you know, WELT, by the way, stands for We Encourage Local Talent. So we do a lot of, we play, I know, isn't that cool?
I like
we,
it.
We play a lot of local artists. A lot of local artists come here and play live on the air. People, when they put their own CDs out, we get a chance to play those, and we play them quite a bit. So we do that. We encourage, there's talent journalists, people who want to, do investigative journalism and things. They're encouraged to come in, and we give them the tools and some of the training so they can put all this stuff together. So it's just been so much fun. I've done radio for all my adult life, and to come over here, less than a year ago, was quite a big leap. But what I'm really enjoying is the people that are doing community radio are in it because they like being broadcasters. They like being able, it's that excitement we all had when we first started in radio about, it's just fun to do, and you got a story to tell, and you can be creative before all that business stuff, mucks it all up for everybody. We get a chance, and that's what I'm seeing every day with community members that come in, and they're excited about wanting to do this kind of show or that kind of show, and, we find a spot, and we try to get them on the air.
Again, you can check out that radio station, acpl.info/WELT. We will link up to that website through WGNRadio.com and OutsideTheLoopRadio.com. But I think it's really great serving the community of Fort Wayne, Indiana, and John O'Rourke is the station manager for WELT. Talking to us this morning from the studios of that radio station, John, thanks for checking in with us. I love what you're doing. Keep it going. The stories need to be told. And thanks for talking to us this morning.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Stevens. Stay right there. This is 720 WGN. WGN, good morning. Mike Steven here along with you on Outside the Loop. Happy to be here with you today. Just jamming out here. I like it. Some soul-shaking blues music from a band from here in Chicago called Curio, spelled C-U-R-I-O. Curio.bandcamp.com is their website where you can find out more info. They are playing the Moonrunners Music Festival at Reggie's in the South Loop on May 4th and 5th. There you go. You can check them out live coming up later on. Is it this week, next week? Well, May 4th and 5th, so next coming week. Each week, I love to feature local music. This week, hearing some jams from Curio. And occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crimewave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. The strip profiles a local musician or band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi. And usually we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood for this this segment, but Steve Krakow is actually, he's on a bit of a vacation. He's just outside the loop in a place called Hawaii. This is what we're getting into.
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
And usually we are in the lair with Steve Krakow, also known as Plastic Crime Wave, but today he is, it's a special Secret History of Chicago Music, because right now Steve is actually in Hawaii. Hi, Steve.
Hi, aloha.
Aloha. I can only imagine you're just wearing like a hula skirt thing.
How about an old threadbare t-shirt?
Or that. That was my next guess. So you're on a little bit of a vacation, but you're not taking a break from the Secret History of Chicago Music. It never sleeps. And this week, you are profiling Deacon Jones. Now, is this technically... I thought the winter blues thing was done, because this is technically more blues music.
Well, you know what? I thought of including him in the winter blues, but the man had such a varied career he's known mostly as a blues artist, but he's had such a varied career and played all kinds of music that I figured I would wait and kind of just, he's his own genre.
He's his own genre. So
he's his own genre, the Deacon.
Let's talk about Deacon Jones. He was originally from Indiana. He was born in Indiana in 1943, and he is playing, he's mostly known for playing the Hammond B3 organ, right?
Yes. So he's an actual local boy. He did not come from the Mississippi Delta either, which also makes him not, you know, a blues guy quite as much, you know?
Right, right. So he comes, he's born in 43. He eventually comes to Chicago, and he starts playing around in the 1960s here.
Yeah, he moved to Chicago with his buddy Johnny Ross, who he played with back in Richmond, Indiana, which I have to admit I've never heard of. I didn't even know there was a Richmond, Indiana. But he started a band that became pretty famous, Baby Huey and the Babysitters. Baby Huey's actually on the cover of the Secret History book.
Oh, I thought I recognized the name.
Yeah, he was one of the first guys I covered for the strip like almost 15 years ago.
All right, so he's playing in Baby Huey and the Babysitters, which is a fantastic name. They're playing five nights a week, and you say here by 1967 they were on the road for more than half of the year.
Yeah, yeah. He started the band, actually, him and his buddy Johnny Ross, and then they sort of added Baby Huey later, a.k.a. James Ramey. So he actually kind of technically started, they were kind of like an R&B band, you know, rather than like a blues band or whatever. But yeah, they put on like a crazy show. They were kind of known for that. And I guess Deacon, who was playing trumpet then, he started on the trumpet. He was known for climbing in the rafters and jumping into the audience, I guess.
It's very rock and roll.
Oh, totally, totally. But they were pretty popular. They were on Curtis Mayfield's label, Curtum. They were flown into Paris to play the Baron Rothschild's daughter's like coming out party and stuff like that. So they were actually fairly popular in the day. And I guess one of the big moments that made him switch from trumpet to B3 organ was they were playing in New York in like 68, and I guess Miles Davis hopped on stage, took away Deacon's trumpet, and blew a solo using one finger that I guess just like completely blew him out of the water because it was Miles Davis, you know? Yeah. And I think that put the seeds in his mind that, maybe trumpet's not for me, you know? Maybe I can't compete with this, you know?
So he switches to the Hammond B3, and eventually he goes out on his own. But when he does that, I mean, Deacon Jones starts to play with this incredible list of musicians.
Oh, it's insane. Well, see, Baby Huey passed away in 1970. And actually, when he passed away, they were calling him number three in the rock star death. I think Jim Morrison hadn't passed yet. So it was like Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Baby Huey was number three. So when he passed away in 1970, they actually, Chaka Khan joined the band for a minute as the singer. So it was like Chaka Khan and the Babysitters for a hot second. But then, yeah, he switched to the B3 after that. And yeah, he's played with so many people. Eric Clapton, Carlos Santana, Buddy Miles, Willie Dixon. And then he became a band leader for Curtis Mayfield and played with Freddie King, and then he was in John Lee Hooker's band for like 18 years.
Wow, so he really had a great run, and he was on some great records with that band?
Yeah, I mean, he played on, I guess there was a kind of like a comeback album of John Lee Hooker's in the mid-90s called Chill Out. That he even wrote some of the songs on it, won Grammys and stuff like that. So he was pretty prolific there to the end, and then he finally might have had enough of Chicago, and he moved to L.A. In the 90s as well, and he joined this band called Mighty Balls of Fire.
That's a great name.
It's a really good name. And I guess, yeah, they were sort of the house band at this place called Babes and Ricky's Inn. And I guess I didn't know this. He played this other it was sort of like a blues and comedy club run by Garrett Morris, you know, from Saturday Night Live. And I guess Garrett Morris was a musician as well and would sometimes hop on stage and play with them. Who knew, right?
Who knew that? Right. You're uncovering all this in the secret history of Chicago music. And he played with some famous people there out in L.A.
Yeah, and he finally, he put out his own. He had a few records here and there, but one from 1997 called Making Blues History. It's got, like, Greg Allman and Dr. John on it.
Not bad.
Not bad. Not bad to be a – I mean, it's funny because he's kind of a sideman, but then he has these amazing people as his sidemen, you know, on those records.
That's incredible. He ends up publishing a book, right, in 2004?
Yeah, he did an autobiography in 2004 and just kept playing with the Deacon Jones band up till his death. He just passed away last year in July 2017.
All right. Well, Deacon Jones is profiled this week in the Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn in the Chicago Reader, so pick up a copy or go to chicagoreader.com. Man, it's an interesting story. Deacon Jones from eventually right here in Chicago, playing all over the place. Mr. Krakow, you have a safe trip back to Chicago and enjoy Hawaii. Maybe get a nice tan. I don't know. What else do you do in Hawaii? Beach?
Oh, the tan is here. The tan is here. Trust me. But if you could just get it a little warmed up in Chicago for my return, that would be nice.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do. You're all primed from Hawaii.
Yeah. I didn't really bring a winter jacket with me, so when I, you know, get to O'Hare, I want it warm, okay?
All right, yeah, I'll be waiting for you with a jacket.
Thank you.
I don't know. Now that I look at the forecast, I might not even need to. It's supposed to get pretty nice this week, which is great. Thank you, Mr. Krakow. Again, Deacon Jones in the Reader. You can check out page 29. Of the Chicago Reader. Got it right here. Listen to that organ. I dig it. This is Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven. Don't go anywhere. We'll take a break and be right back with the news here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Mike Steven wrapping up the 602nd edition of Outside the Loop. Thank you so much for listening today. Thanks to Jess for producing. Thanks to Domati Pongo for doing news. Bob Ferguson is our engineer, and Lou Manfredini is our Mr. Fix-It.
Who are you?
What do you mean, who am
You're
I?
So close.
I know. I was going to say the new year, new me, but we're almost in May here, so I can't say that. How are you, man?
I'm great. How's your lovely family?
They're doing okay. We got a little swim lesson for Mikey today, who's 3 years old.
Do you are one of you in the pool with him?
That is TBD.
What do you mean? Is it the first time he's done it?
Well, we did, you know, I took him for over the summer. We did a bunch of swim lessons at the Park District, and I was in the pool there, but right. Where we're going, it's...
Did you do the motorboat song with the kids?
Well, we tried. Here's the thing. Mikey, all he wants to do is just jump in off the side.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know,
right.
Okay, it's time for the backstroke. Nope, jump it in off the side of the pool.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. I think you and I had this conversation, but you know my good friend Mike Jakubowski.
Yes, sir.
And he has three lovely children who are like my children, because they're like nieces and nephews to me. And I remember him years ago when we were all brand new parents, and he said, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, and then obviously you make all these proclamations when you're a young parent, right? Because you think you know everything.
Right.
I'm not gonna force my kids to do things that they don't want to do, but all my kids are gonna learn how to swim.
No doubt.
And that was like a thing, and yep. I never forgot that. And so his children and my children too are all really, really good swimmers, and that's just takes that out of the equation.
Yeah, you really gotta be.
The swimming thing is really important.
That's right.
So go do motorboat in the pool.
And jump off the side. Thank you for listening to Outside the Loop. I will talk to you again next time right here on 720 WGN.